Hi, everybody. Welcome back to our fourth episode of Season 3 of Battle Driven. As always, this is Schwanky, and I play Scorn.
This is Jason, and I play a lot. I play a lot of different things. We're going to go Minions Menoth. Minions Menoth. We'll stick with that. We'll stick with Eminem.
And this is Jonathan, and I play Crix.
So Jason, do you see how when me and John do that, we just it's very quick, and then you just say like a faction, and then you move on.
Yeah, but I'm. That's just not me.
Are you a special snowflake, Jason?
I'm not saying I'm like a short bus kind of snowflake, but I am saying that when it comes to factions, I have some faction identity issues. I don't identify as just one faction. I'm sorry. This is 2018. I can do that.
I mean, you are allowed to do that, but when asked, you should pick which one at that time, right? Like, you don't play multiple factions in the same game.
But I'm building multiple factions at the same time.
And how long has it been since you played a game?
I haven't played this week. I played Minions. The last time I played Minions and Dojoed Menoth.
So you're a Minions player, and you're only a Menoth thinker. Protectorate. It's Protectorate.
I'm just saying, I think you guys need to be a little more faction fluid. It is 2018. That's all I'm saying.
Okay,
no, I don't think so. So anyway, gentlemen, what are your War Machine thoughts for the evening?
So, I know Jason, because he just said it, didn't play any games, and you played a little bit of weird stuff, unnecessary weird stuff. I got to play an actual game, which is not always the case. I like to go out on Fridays at about 10 o'clock at night and get a game in, so about 1 o'clock in the morning, I played a new Scavarus list. Scavarus in Slaughter Fleet. And can I tell you how black my deep dark heart feels when I get to put Soul Harvester on a unit with Berserk and Overtake? Can I tell you how cool that is? Is it blacker than normal? What's that?
Is it blacker than normal?
Yeah, it feels blacker than normal to be like, I can eat that half of the board's infantry and get all their souls, and then because I have it's an upkeep, I can switch it to this other unit and get that half of the board's infantry. And that just feels really, really dark and awesome. I mean, it's blacker than usual.
Alright.
Speaking as someone who has to play into Crix,
yeah.
And to my dear friend Norbert, this is not an anti-Crix comment.
Comments are anti-Crix comments. Don't you lie, you bastard.
My anti-Crix comment is a generic anti-Crix comment. It's not a I hate Carapace comment. It's just fuck you and your powerful themes. That's all it is. That's all I have to say.
Models are powerful. Characters are powerful. And the change to leadership for Gerlach from leadership to elite cadre Berserk makes all the difference with these Blood Gorgers. It's fantastic. I also put my Black Ogryn boarding party on the table for the first time in, like, 4 years?
How'd that feel?
They're good. They're fine.
Well, that's a weird thing to hear someone say.
Well, they're good?
Yeah.
Well, they gave them gang. That's it. That's all they did. They gave them gang. They took them down a mat. So instead of being mat 7, mat 9 with gang, they're mat 6, mat 8, 8, mat 8 with gang. That's fine.
Did they have a huge point reduction too?
No, they've always been 7-11. They've always been like dirt cheap. But the problem is their armor 16. I'm going to look at Schwanky and point to him now. As we all know from heavy infantry, arm 16 just doesn't cut it.
Nah, not so much.
Not at all.
So they're 16, they're 5 wounds. I mean, that's good enough, especially for 11 points, but it just doesn't feel like when I can spend 11 points on almost anything else in the army that it's worth it. But guns are good, you know. The capacity to hit arm 19, pound strength 19 is good. put the Dirge Seers on the board for the first time. They did well. I'm really happy with the releases recently. The stuff so coming out.
You're liking your new Crix toys?
What's that?
You're liking your new Crix toys then?
I am. I even have a list where I'm contemplating using these Shard Pirates, which is something I've been struggling with a bit. Because they're weird. Like, I don't...
I like the fat-looking pirate. The one looks like that dude from Moana.
Maui!
Yeah, that's the one.
Every time he kills you, I'm going to say you're welcome. Because that's his song in the movie. Like, they do a lot of cool stuff.
It's, oh, alright.
It's based on the UA, mostly. Otherwise, they just have gang. 14 points for arm 13. Or, def 13. Arm 11 with tough. Seems expensive. They don't have AD. They don't have anything super get out there and get delivered, but we'll see how they work out. Sprays are great, so having a whole unit of sprays with assault is probably okay.
Yeah, no, definitely. A whole unit with sprays definitely, you know, seems good. I know Protector players use their cleansers a whole lot, and Trollblood players very often use Scattergunners. So.
They're both spray 8s, right?
Sure, I think so, yeah.
Yeah, right, probably. I'm spray 6s. That makes it more likely that I'll use it, right?
what's a cock unit that has spray 6 and clear?
The other one that never sees play, like cleansers and scattergunners.
Right, yeah. Right. So they decided to take... They have spray 6s too, don't they?
Yes.
I think so, yes.
Yeah.
The cleansers are what? Base 8, but 10 on their mini feet?
Yep.
Yeah. Still don't get play?
Yeah, they actually got a nice little buff because their mini feet used very stupidly. It used to be spray 10 and then becomes pow 10. But now in Mark 3, I believe they get to keep their pow 12 and their spray 10, which is pretty solid.
Yeah, it makes sense. Sprays are theoretically good, but I also, those other two factions, three factions, don't have debuffs, right?
Correct.
They don't have Denny 1 going... I debuff your defense by 4 and your armor by 4, and all of a sudden my mat 5 pow 12s are rat 9 pow 16s. It seems like a difference maker.
Yeah, I mean, a little bit. You know, that 4-point def arm swing is probably going to have some impact on their usefulness.
I'm just going to refer you to my earlier fuck you and move on.
Right. Can you just... You need to have just like a button that you've got recorded. It says, fuck Crix. Fuck Crix. Then you have another one for fuck Signar. Fuck Signar. Like, you can just have those two buttons, and that could be your whole podcast contribution. It'd probably be accurate, right?
Well, yeah, but I need one that just drops the word cunt in there once in a while, too. And other than that, then I'd be fine.
Fair enough. But yeah, so I'm enjoying the new releases. Been looking at the new stuff coming out for, what, Protectorate? Next week?
Yeah, they got some interesting stuff coming down the pipeline. We just had the little, was it a Primecast where they talked about the, what's coming out? Or it wasn't a Primecast, it was like just a Facebook Live video they did.
Right? Yeah, one of the dev talks.
One of the dev talks where they just kind of briefly spoiled what was coming down the pipe.
Yeah, five new things, and then everything else is legacy stuff, which is really, really cool. I like it when people get powerful new shit, and it looks like if they do it right, the exemplars will be full of powerful new shit.
Yes, definitely. New toys are always fun.
So that's
new powerful toys. Like, if you get a whole bunch of cleansers, nobody's gonna care.
No, not at all. So let's take a look at what's coming down the pipe and see what we think this means.
All right.
We have High Exemplar Serena, which is a small based caster. Which is basically like General Patton in Protectorate of Minoth.
That's weird. There aren't any tanks in the Protectorate.
So is it Patton in, like, so Patton's a cavalry officer, right? Because cavalry is tanks in World War II. So does that make her a cav officer? Or does that make her a warjack Patton? Because don't they have that in Amon Adraza?
He just makes them faster and he has synergy.
Like, that seems, that seems like Patton.
Yeah, honestly, if she's going to be a Jack caster, I think she's going to have a hard time finding play. Because Amon is so good at it.
See, I thought Patton just showed up and saved people who didn't need to be saved, like the Airborne.
No, he also beat many, many asses. With tanks.
Okay, fair enough.
Not even good tanks.
No, with shitty Sherman tanks. So, when you have so many of them.
It's true.
So really, does it mean that she's going to be a Jack caster, or is she going to be a cavalry caster, or is she going to be a medium-based infantry caster?
I don't know. Let's see what comes up.
Speaking of Cav, can we talk about that Cav solo that's coming?
The Cav solo, which is the Hand of Silence, which is a character reclaimer on a horse.
That actually seemed interesting.
With a soul flamethrower. A flamethrower powered by souls.
That is the best kind of flamethrower, in my opinion, that I've heard of. Why would you shoot normal fire when you can shoot the shrieking souls of the damned?
Well, these are your buddies, so...
They're probably shrieking friendly souls of vengeance? You know, yes, go eat them, my minions. Shoo.
Yeah, that seems cool.
I do like reclaimers because it's kind of fun to throw Ashen Veil on a model in the middle of a unit and send it off when people aren't expecting it, or throw it on a jack that's under Durst's feet, kind of thing.
Ashen Veil is super close to my heart. It's a really cool ability. I like it a lot, and if I can see it some more, that'd be great.
Let me tell you about Ashen Veil.
Okay.
How miserable it is to deal with when you have two bad legends in a lot of your lists. You would not believe how much board space one godforsaken warjack with Ashen Veil can cover. When if any part of my huge base is anywhere near it,
do you have to play becomes to Matt Manslayers? 4.
You're referring to obviously the Derp Tortoise, which I can honestly say I don't care. You're more than welcome to take your debuffs and like it.
That's fair. I'm not gonna though. No. So
we have an.
Tell you what, if you can bitch about Crix all day, I can complain about Ashen Veiling my Derp Turtle so that it makes it so I can't hit a model like 8 inches away from the Ashen Veil model.
So I will say touche to that. You are more than welcome to. Touche is a French word. It means Hegelian. And so then there's the Exemplar Warder. It's a caster attachment. Think Fae Knight Guardian meets War Dog.
He's the guard. Yeah, the guard dog one, right? That's interesting.
So it should be interesting. I wonder if it's going to have a no knockdown element that'll bestow the caster.
I mean, both of them do, right?
The faction's loaded with it already.
Well, the dog has +2 def and countercharge and no backstrikes.
The Fae Knight has counterstrike as well? Knockdown. Or countercharge as well?
I don't think the Fae Knight has countercharge. I believe he also has shield guard.
Shield guard and no knockdown, I think. No knockdown, no stationary, something like that. So that means you don't have to keep the book around your caster. Well, the book's not allowed in the exemplar theme anyways, but still.
Yeah. So if it's shield guard, no knockdown, and countercharge.
Throw +2 def in there for fun.
Death guard dog.
Yeah.
Shield guard dog. Countercharge. I'd be okay with that. Like, that sounds like a pain in the ass combat solo. But then it's an attachment, and attachments are in a super weird place, where
especially for a protectorate,
right?
Because it's just the Hierophant, right? It's well, you could take the Merc ones, a couple of the Merc ones. Well, at least the Corbeau.
Yeah, but like, it's just the Hierophant isn't really something I feel like you can say with a straight face. Like that model is a pretty fucking big deal in a lot of the lists it shows up in.
It's a massive deal.
It needs a free upkeep thing.
No! You get 1 point less on a spell. That's a free upkeep, you douche.
Same thing.
Both.
What do you mean both? Get out of here.
Anyways.
Nonsense.
No, the free upkeep thing is super sweet, having used it recently in the Satixis Blood Priests. It's amazing. It should happen more often.
So that would also leave us with the Cinerator Officer, who has more than Shield Wall.
Well, he better, because the Incinerators are terrible, and if they give him only an additional terrible rule, it will not make anything better.
Incinerators need some love. They better get some love. But yeah, it could be interesting, because we were thinking the Bastions should go high defense and the Incinerators should go high armor in our previous kind of conversation.
Right.
So it'd be interesting to see what they get if they kind of, you know, if we kind of hit the nail on the head ahead of time.
Well, they said they'll be getting a point reduction by one point. And then shield wall, and then whatever else the UA brings, that's fine. But
we'll see. I mean, the last time I tried to do something unique with the UA, you got that bizarre attachment to the chainsaw grenade launcher, shock troopers,
chainsaw grenade launchers at best. The bombardiers,
the Texas chainsaw Kador guy, yes.
Yeah, but that's where he adds, like, a couple of weird rules.
Pathfinder, like if they walk.
I can walk and have Pathfinder. I will say, the mini feet we all get to shoot twice seems fun, but...
That seems fantastic.
But then the walking Pathfinder is weird, so, I mean, I can't even begin to think of what they might give this guy.
What's the Kador UA pikeman thing? They can make a full advance and then...
And then shield wall. The standard UA.
Yeah, so I mean something like that, just because they're so damn slow.
Yeah, I mean,
yeah, that's amazing. So
they did change it in Mark III. It's not just like an advance. It's a it's repo now, so that can get in the way of some things. I can't think of anything that would make weird in Protectorate though.
Yeah, and the last thing is a structure called the Shrine of... My phone locked itself. It's called the Shrine of the Lawgiver. It's a structure that's really tall. Jonathan, you had an interesting theory as to what this might
be. Have they mentioned if it's going to be a character?
No, that's just a personal pet theory of mine. Where I really, really hope it is the entombed corpse of Severius III.
So, it couldn't be that and still not be a character, right? I mean,
if you chop the corpse up.
Well, that's what I mean. So, like, you know, if you look at, the series of Christian shrines and, like, little cathedrals and shit that have, like, oh, well, we have the index finger of this random saint here on display in this shrine. You know, they could pull one of those, you know, butcher up Severius, make a whole bunch of shrines.
And they do have precedence for it. The both the Revelator and the Vessel of Judgment are powered by entombed people.
Yes.
So they can literally just have Sevi. Just
my structure will have the entombed penis of Sevi.
I mean, that's what you get to decide in your headcanon, man.
The Adjudicator has that too, right? The both versions of the Colossal have the...
They have a reliquary.
Yeah, if they both have reliquaries, then they both have dead people inside of them. That's how that works.
I think what they need to do is find a better dead person for the Adjudicator. They need a more powerful soul.
Now,
yeah,
it would be amazing to see the first character Colossal in the game. Like have Sevi.
Yeah, have Sevi III fucking in a character Colossal.
Sevi III just like, oh, Karchev, think you're a big badass getting yourself stretched into a warjack, huh? Well, I'm dead, so I am the warjack now.
The warjack is me. So, Master Blaster.
Oh my god. Anyway, so those are the new models that they teased, and I'm really looking forward to Tuesday. See how far off the mark we are, how far on the mark we are. And we'll definitely provide an update next week as to...
Yeah, should be good. Instead of just trying to fill a little bit of time by just talking about things that everyone already heard, we'll have something we can actually discuss.
And so I'm really disappointed. I'm really disappointed that there's no Scrutators in there. Not one.
It does seem weird because it is kind of, you know, the Screwtater theme for us. And I definitely, you know, I thought it'd be really interesting to see like a Screwtater solo that kind of worked like a Commissar.
Oh, that would be amazing.
You know, like, you know, I mean, you know, running away isn't a thing anymore, but maybe you could be like, well, he has spells or something that he can fuel with souls, and, you know, he can kill someone, take their soul and do a cool thing with it.
Yeah, I think that would be fantastic, because then you have this like terrifying dude in the backfield, whoever is like, forward, because that guy's gonna eat us. Like, it seems perfect. It's exactly Protectorate.
Yep. I would definitely be a fan.
So, Dan, I know you once upon a time played Kotor. And you sure did. You brought this up with the Chainsaw Boy. B-O-I boy.
Wait. I mean, how else would you spell it?
I don't know. I mean, that's right. I'm just making sure. So.
It's okay. I'm in the background looking up what Screwtater is. Just carry on. We're good.
So with Chainsaw Boy, because I was deep in there, I looked at stuff, but I don't know from an insider's perspective. How do you view what came out of CID for Kotor?
So I've always liked Manowar. They kind of got me into the faction. I was always really bummed that everything except Shock Troopers sucked.
Yep.
Has
that changed?
So my initial takes on it now, granted, I haven't played faction a little bit. I don't plan on playing them in a little while. So, you know, I definitely want to wait and see what tournament results show. I like the new Bombardiers. Range 12 on their guns instead of 10 is a pretty big deal. And the firing twice thing is just incredible on a 5-man unit that has AoEs. Like, it really lets you do a lot of infantry clearing. I don't think demo cores are good.
They didn't quite make it through, right?
I think they're probably still bad.
That's lame.
Shatter is a very situational ability. It seems to me like they're probably tailor-made to be used with one of the sources.
Yeah.
Which is fine, but kind of annoying. The only reason I used them at all in Mark II was for backswing.
Mm-hmm.
And they still don't have that. So...
So wouldn't it be, like, really cool to use, like, Grey Lords or something to freeze your target before you charge it with Shatter?
It'd be super neat if Grey Lords were allowed in the Manowar theme.
Oh.
Time to play out a theme.
Oh, God. Okay. You have a lot of crit freeze in your army. Is any of it allowed?
Yes. So our premier crit freeze piece is the Juggernaut.
Mm-hmm.
So how many things do you think the Juggernaut's gonna freeze instead of killing?
Zero.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay.
So they well, like I said, most of it's gonna come. Most of it's gonna come from the sources.
So you gave they gave an awesome piece, some great synergies with parts of the faction that up until a year ago would have made them completely awesome.
Yeah.
Okay, all right, just making sure I understood what happened there.
Yeah, and don't get me wrong. I think one unit with Dragos Dragadovic Dragonagon, or whatever his name is,
right,
is probably a good call, just because he himself is a very nasty combat solo, UA.
Is that the UA that gives...
Sanguine Bond for a turn?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that seems solid to me. Because at that point, you get up there, and then you just fling the unit forward as far as you want, and then your opponent has to do, I think, was it like 44 points of damage before any of them even start to take damage?
Or like die.
Before he kill anything.
Yeah,
that seems... I mean, that's solid. And there's still a decent hard-hitting melee unit, which oddly enough is something this theme lacks, because Shock Troopers don't hit that hard.
No, a 14 Weapon Master, right?
I don't think they're Weapon Masters. If they are, then... Oh, they are.
They've always been Weapon Masters.
Never mind, I lied. Shock Troopers hit pretty hard, too.
But the quantity of attacks in that army is not going to be high no matter what you do. So saying a 14 weapon master is not hitting particularly hard.
No, they're
is
not.
Something
they're
I would believe.
They're not weapon masters.
Yeah. Okay. Good. You're crazy, not me.
Okay.
Yeah,
that's,
so
it's fine.
I would have lost money on that bet too. I thought they were weapon masters.
But yeah. No, I would say the for that regard, I think that's where the suppression tanker comes into play. Yeah. The suppression tanker having access to covering fire is a pretty big deal for keeping Man of Wars from getting jammed.
So the one thing in our little conversation that neglected to come up was the Demogorgon themselves have crit freeze.
Yes.
So, I mean, if they crit hit, they get the extra die on their own damage roll.
Yeah.
Right, but trying to manufacture that seems really hard.
In general, I pretty much am never going to be excited to play a unit where their game plan is just go crit fishing all the time.
Battle loss, right?
I mean, it's Kador. We can make them hit harder. It's just, you know, it just comes to a point where I'm like, eh.
Yeah.
They don't do anything for me. They don't jump out at me. Nothing about them excites me.
Fair enough.
You know, they hit hard, which is good. They started 2 points higher than Shock Troopers, which, you know, is going to be helpful for with Source of 3 when you get a couple of Reach Jacks in there. But honestly, I got to tell you, the stuff that changed in this new CID that excites me is mostly the War Jacks. The Spriggan's goddamn incredible now.
So wait, you're saying you don't want to take Karchief 2, sorry, Strakoff 2 and put Last Stand on units of Demogorgon and send them in?
That sounds terrible.
Oh, I don't know, man. Do you get excited about putting Last Stand on a fucking medium base unit with A5 base?
Go get him, Dragovich McDragodraga. I hope you die on the way out.
Don't get me wrong, it would be hilarious, but it does not feel like a good way to spend your resources. Although Demogorgon are pretty cheap now.
Yeah.
The Spriggan, I'm in love with.
Please put that back on your shelf. I mean, take it out for a day, look at it for a little bit, but Denny wants to live through any game ever, so please put her back. Just put Spriggan back on your shelf. Don't look at his rules again.
That'd be great. Nah, you go to hell. You're getting...
You go to hell and you die!
Yeah, you're getting dual attack flare now, you son of a bitch!
Yeah, that's what, 17-inch threat range on that flare?
Absolutely. And man, when the rules were released and it looked like that had gotten dual attack taken away, the Kador groups flipped the fuck out.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh.
It was like, well, I mean, it was the change we were all super excited for. But then it was like, okay, no, fine, it was a typo, guys, it's fine, it's not, relax. It was a mistake. Like, oh, okay.
That the whole reason that Reinhold and therefore characters are not allowed in Winter Guard Command.
The whole reason that what?
Winter Guard Command says non-character merc solos. I assume that is because
actually, I think it's not. It doesn't even allow solos. Period.
What's that?
Doesn't allow merc solos. Period. All units.
I was pretty sure. Pretty sure it was non-character because there's only two non-character solos.
Yeah, you're not allowed to have them.
And it was because they didn't want. At least in my estimation. Oh, well, that makes sense, because Reinhold removes stealth, and Winter Guard Command and Nine Rockets' only problem ever is stealth. So that means that they understood that, and they built in a weakness. They're like, but you can fix this weakness by spending 0 points.
Hey, it's a boss war job, we're going to say.
Yeah, that's... Now Denny hides behind trees as opposed to just out in the open.
Let's see. What else excited me? Beast being 18 points? Oh, my God.
How many
glorious.
Was he?
18. How many was he? 21 or 22?
Oh, my heart. Oh, my Jesus.
Dumb as hell. even better.
He does have crit freeze. Just saying. Synergizes with that Demogorgon.
You know, even better, Ruin did not get more expensive somehow. He's still 17 points.
I don't know.
But I gotta say, probably the Jack I'm most excited about is our much, much maligned, red-headed stepchild of a Colossal.
Victor.
The Victor. This son of a bitch is a fucking monster now.
Please.
34 points and he lost inaccurate? Holy shit.
Losing inaccurate. Losing inaccurate both matters a whole lot and it doesn't. Like, it gives you hope back. It allows you to think that you're going to hit something, which is fine. But he's also just rat 4. So realistically, it's 4 points of attack swing, which is fine. That is a perfectly acceptable thing to give.
Let's see. It's rat 4, plus it can boost. So now we're hitting def 14 on average.
It seems good.
Plus it's an AoE, so I have a Winter Guard model that can give it that rule, that name I forgot, but it gives a plus 2 to hit. So now it's rat 6.
Artillerist.
Yeah, Artillerist. And I'm just throwing out fire pie plates just all over the place.
Just everywhere. It's on fire. Yeah.
or, you know, what is it? Like top of one
deployment zone.
I can dump rough terrain just outside your deployment zone.
Yeah.
With Malakov's new change now, I can do it twice.
So what are the changes to Malakov that have you excited?
Malakov is actually interesting now, and I'm sure someone will disagree with me, but I think he might be a legitimate option now. He's got some really interesting stuff, and I'm just talking so I can find him in my... There he is. Okay, so... let's see. His feat change is a huge deal. Poison Pill, it used to just be Warjacks... that, you know, after a Warjack took damage, it would make enemy a full advance and everything got parry. But it was just Jax.
That, I mean, but Jax can't take any poison.
It's fine.
Okay.
So, right. But now it's your whole army.
Gets
so,
if all the anything, same thing?
Yeah. Anything in your army takes damage, it gets to make a full advance, and everything in your army gets parry and can't be knocked down.
That seems really good,
right? So your single one infantry will never benefit from the move, but they benefit a lot from no knockdown and parry.
No knockdown and parry. Yeah, that seems good. Kazi seem legit. They already Absolutely. Have parry, right? But
yes, but then you get, you know. Cav.
Yeah.
Oh, you hit me? Oh, man, I'm going to go 7 inches over there. I'll see you later.
Yeah. It seems I'm going to set up a charge for next turn where I can see it faster.
Exactly.
It's like Virus 2's feet plus a rough feet and just the yep. best portions of each.
Yeah. And plus, open fire is a cool spell now. It's basically jackhammer, but you can shoot with it, and you can only cast it once per model.
Okay.
So, makes sense. You know, putting that on something like the Victor makes a hell of a lot of sense now, because you can it just doubles the amount of pie plates you can shit out
yep.
with pretty decent accuracy now, which is good.
Yep.
Yeah, he's got some neat new tricks.
I mean, you won't be able to boost, right?
What's up?
You won't be able to boost.
You will not, no.
Yeah, so that takes his accuracy down to acceptable levels.
Yeah, but again, that's fine.
Right.
You're just throwing pie plates around. You know, you're not really looking to hit.
Yep.
But yeah, so I like him a lot. I think overall, with the exception of the fact that I find the Dynamo card to be a bit disappointing, I enjoy pretty much everything about the new stuff. The battle engines, I don't really have any opinion on. And the strike tanker, I know a lot of people are down on it. I'm not sure. It's got a really good gun, but that's all it's got. And I think the suppressor tanker is going to be... So the problem is you're fighting for free points, right?
Yep.
So you've got your strike tanker, which has a cool gun. It does some neat shit.
Mm-hmm.
Or you have your suppressor tanker, which is 100% required for this theme to function properly.
Because you have to take care of infantry else you get, mucked up.
You need those covering fires, or just shit just gets bogged down, you lose.
Yep.
So I don't know if it's a problem that the Star Tanker is bad, or just that the Suppressor Tanker is significantly better to the point that it's almost mandatory.
Fair. I gotcha.
Okay. I'm just going to look. Just something you just said about covering fire. Covering fire, is that considered an enemy attack, Jonathan?
Not that I know of.
It's definitely not. Why do you ask?
I was just wondering if it would trigger battle driven on the...
No, I believe they just get shot down and everybody gets terrified.
Yeah, no. Covering fire ignores all of those rules. It denies that. It denies soul collection for some fucking reason. Because apparently if you get shot down by bullets that are not aimed at you, your soul just leaves immediately.
No, you're taking the wrong tack. Covering fire bullets are so powerful they even kill your soul.
Oh, okay. So it just obliterates your soul right away. That's where Necrotite comes from. It's covering fire bullets.
Right.
Your soul just goes right into the ground and you become a glowy rock.
Exactly. That is correct.
Sorry. I was thinking sustained fire is what I was thinking.
I don't know what that is.
Is that his spray of doom?
That's when you can... that's like the Stormwall can place down the wall templates.
That's still covering fire.
That's covering fire.
Oh, the rule for them is called sustained fire.
Hmm.
Probably because it's a star action or a star attack instead of a star action. Like, there's probably some minute, dumb thing.
This is the Stormwall?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's because because it's not a star attack, which is what covering fire is, they have to give it a different name. Or a star action. I don't remember specifically what the...
sustained fire isn't a star, anything. So you can... I think it needs to be that so that you can use it and still shoot your main guns, right?
Right. Because covering fire is a star action. If sustained fire was covering fire, then you couldn't do any of your attacks. But because it's just a decision point, it needs a different rule.
So there you go.
Well, there we go. I turned that little rabbit hole into a lesson. You're welcome, listeners. Anyways.
So I think that's all I wanted to get from Kador. Essentially, it's good.
I'm okay with it. I like it. I'm excited to see what Kotor players do with it and where it ends up as far as the meta.
Yeah, I mean, there's a bit of me that's looking at the newest releases going, there's going to be just a lot of boxes. Look at Maelok, look at Chosen, look at just the rest of that whole theme. And then look at Demogorgon, and now we're going to go right into Exemplar, and then Tharn, and it's like, man, I guess I have to play Banes forever. Oh, so here's my tiny fiddle for myself.
Exemplars were the original Sanguine Bond, so they better get, the Bastions anyways, they better get one hell of a good fucking Sanguine Bond, like... When you share damage, reduce it by D3 or some shit. Like, because they were the model that everyone else is based on, and everyone else just seems a hell of a lot better.
They're going to stay shit.
Yeah, they'll have their speed reduced by 1, their reach reduced by 1, and their power reduced by 4.
Yeah, and their points will go up by 6.
Exemplar. Points go up by 6, correct. We share the same thing. But no, I think the Exemplar would be cool.
Jay's Rage goes up to...
No, I definitely think you're right. I definitely see the meta moving towards a return to kind of that the old massive meat mountain era of nonsense.
Yeah,
you know, when you the heyday when you had the bullshit trolls are pulling with warders, you had the bullshit Scorn was pulling with Fists of Halak.
Yeah, that wasn't bullshit. That was awesome.
That was awesome. I still own that list.
I do too. Is,
over there on the shelf. With the rest of my cataphracts that I don't use.
Yeah, they'll eventually get a CID and you will. That's just how the meta's flip-flopping, right?
When, right? I got a problem with the pace of CID. Not that it is too fast or too slow, but they can never get enough done. It's just not possible. Like, by the time we get around to Rhett and Scorn, it's going to be the middle of 2019, and that's miserable.
I don't mind it, honestly. I feel like it's most important that they use it to address, to both get new shit out and to also kind of address balance issues. And I feel like right now, competitively, Scorn's in a really good place. My biggest problem is how much of that rests in the back of our Battle Engines.
Yep.
So I would love to see a CID for Scorn that addresses a few things. I'd love to see the Battle Engines kind of come down a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd love to see our Titans get pumped up.
How do you possibly pump them up? They're fucking monsters.
I want Def 12 back.
Monsters.
I want Def... Titans? When's the last time you saw more than two Titans on the board?
A lot.
Oh. Well, your friends play weird Scorn lists.
Like... four centuries with two turtles. It's just been, I've seen some really interesting janky lists that just molest the shit out of people.
So centuries are a bit of an exemption, and that's the fact. And honestly, I think that has way more to do with them having shield guards.
Yeah, I have not experienced that.
Yeah.
Not at all.
Gladiators, you always have one because Rush is mandatory.
It's all turtles. All turtles forever.
Yeah. There's a lot of stuff that I would love to see change. I want to see them back to Def 12 across the board. I want to see that back. They're expensive, so there's no reason for them not to be to have their garbage defense stats they have right now. I'd like to see the Sentry get Locker back. That was a really interesting animus that I always had a lot of fun using, and I'd like to see those options kind of return to us. The Bronze back's probably fine. Although someone mentioned what?
I was going to say, Def 12 makes no sense on these giant, slow-moving elephants. No. Now, can I see those extra 2 points channeled into armor? Sure, making them armor 20, armor 21, no problem.
But that's also fine, but like that, you know, I'm just going Def 12, but that's what they were in Mark 2.
What are they? Yeah. Are they on average armor 18, 19?
19.
They're 19 across the board.
Yeah. I thought... it's 21 on the Sentry because of the shield.
Correct.
Right, but
I thought one of them was 18. I don't know why.
The Kenmir used to be 18. He may still be 18. She may still be 18, but I don't believe so.
But even so, make them 10-20. Make them Kador Jax. I have no problem with that. That's what they're supposed to be anyways. They're Hulks.
Yeah, sure. That's fine too. I liked 12-19 as a stat line. It was really solid. It was something you could work with. They were a lot harder to hit than people thought they should be. And so, you know, more often than not, my Titans survive combat. As it is right now, I don't run them, basically. I have one list with two sentries in it. One gladiator shows up a lot. I don't use bronze back at all. The bronze back used to be like a go-to beast for us in Mark II, and now it just kind of seems lacking. I think mostly because it just has a hard time getting across to you without dying. And the Aratus soldiers have really filled a lot of the role the bronze back used to hold in my lists. It doesn't hit quite as hard, but it is not going to die to shooting. And it's got some really nice pull tech that can kind of fuck with charge lanes and shit like that. And it still hits pretty hard under Enrage. It just comes to a point where, you know, I used to run a Titan Herd all the time. You used to see Titan Herds as a pretty regular Scorn option, and it's just gone now.
See, I'd like to see more Cyclops heavies and have them be Def 12, Def 13, Def 14, and lower armor, so you could have your options of your meaty elephants or your dancing, prancing Cyclopses, right?
And then I'm never going to be sad about more War Beasts. I just don't think Titans are where they should be right now.
All right. Even though this is kind of far down the rabbit hole, what are your thoughts on the, Jesus Christ, the other Colossal they have, the other Gargantuan, the Desert Hydra? I've never seen one on the table.
Yeah, it's cool. It's just, it doesn't really fit any of our lists right now.
I've never heard of one being put on the table.
That's what I mean. It's such a beautiful model, and I've never seen it in play.
Makeda 1, I've noticed, is starting to come up in the world versus Makeda 2. Before themes were a thing, I believe Jason Belcher ran a Makeda 1 list that had a Desert Hydra, and that became fairly popular because of that. Just had a lot of silly throw ranges and things of that nature. But I think right now it's just none of our current theme archetypes really support the model. I think the Hydra is better than the Mammoth, but that's not an especially high bar to clear.
But I mean, a lot of these large bases, huge bases as they are, have been kind of pushed out of the meta. I think a lot of it has to do with 2017, 2018, not being able to contest enough area. Yeah, they can get into certain points, but you need more everything in SR 2017 and 2018.
I don't know. It's funny you say that, because I've seen more and more Colossals and Gargantuans on the table now than I have in the last... So in the last 6 months, I've seen more than I probably have in the previous 18 months. They seem to be having a comeback, but not all of them, right? Like, there's still those ones I've never seen on the table. Like, and Stormwalls don't count, because you always see Stormwalls. But because they were never... Because they have that Kador juiciness that they're not allowed to have a bad model. But I've seen that Kraken's on the table.
You meant Signar.
What did I say?
You said Kador.
Signar. Yes, I meant to say Signar.
I know your biases, sir.
It's funny you mention that, because like I actually think the Stormwall isn't that impressive from Mark II, whereas the Conquest has overtaken it in almost every department as far as being a good Colossal.
It was just the whole Lightning Pod thing, the fact they could reach out and contest zones. And
yeah, the Lightning Pod's a big deal.
Electro Leap off their own pods and shit like that to kill solos that they couldn't reach before. That kind of crap tech. And Arcane Shield tilts that thing to beyond where it should be.
Yes, it's definitely true.
Earthbreakers, I don't see on the table anymore. I see them on the table about as often as I see the Desert Hydra.
Yeah, I'm honestly, as soon as that that old what the shit's his name, the troll general guy, not troll, dwarf general guy.
Osram.
Yeah, as soon as that Osram super top of two assassination list went away, those things kind of died.
I see the odd galleon. I see the odd Kraken. Very rarely have I seen a
sepulcher.
So yeah, that thing. I haven't seen Judicator, but they suck. I've seen
all bullshit.
Yeah, I've seen Revelators on the table.
They're not real bullshit.
I've seen Hyperions. I've seen the hell's the other one? I've seen the two Wreck Colossals all over the place. Hyperion and that other one. Yeah, you know what I'm talking about.
Helios.
The one with the pull gun?
Helios,
yes, thank you. I mean, I see those, but I haven't seen the Mammoth, really. I haven't seen the Desert Hydra. Both troll ones are great.
You know, the troll ones are okay. They don't get played because other shit's better. But, you know, Gargantuans have always been a hard sell just because of the way Fury works. So I'm not surprised to see fewer Gargantuans on the board.
Fair enough.
So, who wants to answer some questions today?
Questions?
Yeah.
Can I be belligerent?
What's up?
Can I be belligerent in answering questions?
Have you not been being belligerent so far?
I mean... This is only episode 4 for me. I have to test my waters, man. I haven't let loose on full John belligerency.
Hey, you keep doing you. You keep doing what you do, John.
All right. Sounds good.
But, you know, having said that, Jason, this is your job.
It's my job. Sweet.
You read these questions.
I'm looking them up as we speak because my Facebook closed. Posts. Here we are. So
riveting radio.
We will start from the bottom and work our way up.
All right.
Mark Giroux asks, cheese dreams, fact or fake news?
So I think I had to look this up, or I had to have this looked up for me to be completely accurate. Dan?
I had to look it up.
Did you know what this was?
No, I have no idea. Something about open face grilled cheese.
So when I looked it up, it was a
Jason, did you know about this before?
I did not know what it was. I had to look it up, and it came up as a grilled cheese sandwich that's fried on one side and broiled on the other.
So I guess it's facts, right?
You know what? No wrong way to eat grilled cheese. You do you, Mark. And next question.
Open face grilled cheese sandwich. I have to say I'm intrigued. Like, now, I'd be more inclined to make two of them and fold them together and turn them into a giant grilled cheese sandwich with some bacon in between them. But I have to admit, hey, bread, it's cheese. It's, well, the bread's bad. It's carbs. But if I could replace that with a different type of cheese, I don't know. If it was cheese, cheese, bacon,
man,
cheese.
Man, you could just ramble about anything, can you?
You're fucking right, I can. I'm Canadian. We haven't worked gifted.
In the United States.
Paul, next question.
In the United States, what we did was we took a chicken breast and we put cheese on it. And then we closed it.
Are you talking about the double down?
Yep. Next question.
Is it? I was going to say there's a new waffle double down, but that's a whole different rabbit hole.
Oh, my God.
Nikki Massa asks, is the meta cycling too fast? And in addition, do you find it better to plan for the boogeymen of the meta or the archetypes of the meta?
So, I do not think the meta is cycling too fast. I do find it interesting that there seems to be a very widely held perception that the meta is cycling too fast. And I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that a lot of people really consider the CID process to be more real rules than fake rules. And they're wrong. Really, you're looking at quarterly releases, and the rest of it is just, let's see what happens. I don't feel like I'm getting behind as far as meta building.
Yeah, I mean, so in Mark 2, we got, what, a meta shift every year?
No.
Now we're getting a meta shift every quarter?
And it's a much smaller shift.
So, yeah, it is a much smaller shift. I think every 6 months we're getting a rather large shift through something or another. When was LVO? It's February.
Yeah.
That's when Slayers hit, and that caused people all sorts of grief. But I think 6 months is probably the right amount of time to be shifting and moving, right? If you've got small shifts in between as new stuff's discovered and comes out and is released and is played at, and then a big shift every 6 months where a list is discovered or a release comes out that changes the landscape of the game, that's good and healthy. I could even go as far as maybe a year before needing real solid intervention. But I don't feel that the meta is changing too fast. I feel it's changing about the right pace. It's a gradual thing that's visible to all. It's not like Butcher 3 dropping out of existence into the middle of Gen Con and wrecking everyone for days.
Right.
We all know it's coming 3 months in advance.
I
can't disagree with that, Jonathan. The one thing I will say is I think... And I know Dan says the meta's not moving that fast. I don't think it's moving fast, but I definitely believe it's progressing at a pace that Mark II did not. Do I think it's an uncomfortable pace? No, actually, I really enjoy it. I enjoy the fact that when I go from steamroller to steamroller now, I don't know what to expect. In Mark II, it was, okay, I need to plan for Body and Soul, and I need to plan for Haley 2, and fuck those two. Right, and that ruined, it was always, you know, it was a lot of the same repetitive horseshit over and over and over. And, you know, you'd show up to a steamroller and you'd be like, I need more middle fingers. I don't have enough middle fingers for all you fucking cunts and your Haley 2s and your Body and Souls. But now it's like, oh, you're doing what with that Scorn list? Or, oh, you're doing what with that Minions list? Or, and like, when you go to a steamroller, there's... And like, and with the CID thing, like, I know my next steamroller is going to have new Kador stuff that I've never played into across the table from me yet, or potentially across the table. And then the one after that will have the new Legion stuff. And it's just, it's exciting because it's, while it's not running away from me, it is in a progressive state. And it's just exciting.
So I agree. And there are a couple points in there that I really liked. Not, but that unsupport what I'm thinking and how I look at it, which is strange. The first is that things are changing fairly fluidly and fairly rapidly. One of the problems with that is that for a new player or for somebody who doesn't own everything, saving up and buying a thing, anything, is a risky move. Because in 2 months, that $80 unit that you spent fucking 4 months with your $20 a month savings is not worth it anymore, right? It cycles out, which can be very painful for people who are on a budget, who are very strictly adhering to, I only buy what I need to play the game. Well, when it was Mark II, you bought your stuff and you held on to it for 2 years. Now that is not the case. You may not hold on to something for longer than 6 or 8 months. And that doesn't make a good return on investment, realistically. And to compound that is the meta, because it's always stuff you haven't played against, is becoming a series, if you're not aware of it, of gotchas. Oh shit, I've never seen this happen in a game, and now I'm seeing it for the first time in a tournament. Gotcha. Now I'm seeing this, and gotcha. And it, those two compounding could lend credence to an argument that the meta changes too fast. And I can see that argument existing.
Yeah, that's fair. I can see that.
See,
so speaking of gotchas,
what
do you guys think about part two of that question?
Do we plan for better to plan for boogeymen or archetypes?
Yep.
I think by the nature of the answer I gave, you got to plan for archetypes and not boogeymen, because the boogeymen shift.
Yeah, I might throw in a plan for a boogeyman list, and that's really if it's something I'm really, really worried about. Most of the time, I just try to plan based on themes or like list archetypes and things like that. I find that planning for boogeymen, you can find yourself pigeonholed really fast.
The with the disappearance of Ghost Fleet from the meta, because of the inclusion of so much RFP, it's just that you can plan for archetypes. If Ghost Fleet were to somehow make a massive resurgence, you'd have to have a drop for that damn thing.
Yes, you would.
But otherwise, it's just, I have my shooty list, I have my RFP list or whatever, and then you just go. Like, I have my armor list, I have my armor cracking list, or I have my, or whatever my pair is. I'm taking my speed list to counter, you know, your speed list, and I'm taking my armor list to counter your, hopefully, armor cracking list, like whatever. You just take your two and you go and you roll the dice and you hopefully get paired up into stuff that's good.
Yep.
So I don't like to just play what's good. I like to prepare for the meta. I like to know who's out there and who I have to face and what they're going to be playing. So while I don't plan for boogeymen, I am not going to ignore them. Because then the boogeymen just level me. So I'm kind of in between. I will try and cover all my archetypes while checking for specific boogeymen. So in where I go, Kara Sloan is a constant and ever-present being that hovers on the edges of my consciousness waiting for me to go to sleep so she can send a bullet through my head. And I have to worry about it. It's going to be at almost every tournament. It's going to be at almost every convention I go to.
Really?
So I have to worry about it. So if I can take care of her while also doing something else, I will.
See, I don't think, and again, that's very meta specific, because I have a lot of Signar players in my area, or at least I used to. They're kind of weaning themselves out, but I find that I haven't played into a Kara Sloan drop in I don't know how long.
Right, and that's pretty much exactly where I was going. In my meta, I worry about my specific things because I worry about what I'm going to play. I'm not going to end up playing into the national meta of Higley 3s because all the two Signar players have said, we don't like her. I never have to play into Higley 3, and that's great. I never ended up playing into Bradagus. I played into Una 2 once. Like, there's just all these things I get to dodge forever because the meta I exist in, even the conventions I go to, are all within the same general meta. So I do plan for boogeymen, and I think it's appropriate to plan for a certain level of boogeymen. But make sure you cover your archetypes, because if you leave one out, you will be ended.
Yes. Yeah, that's definitely true.
All right, I think we got that question conquered. Seth Cohen. Does our hobby overly suffer from net decking? If so, does it inhibit creative list building?
Ooh, can I get this one?
So, I love net.
I think he froze.
Yep. John? Can you hear me now?
I can hear you just fine.
All right, good. What you said something.
I said, ooh, can I get this one?
You absolutely can.
No. No, it's not. All right, I'm done.
All right, so I love net decking. I think it's super helpful in this community. It serves a couple roles. The biggest one for me is as someone who doesn't get to play that much, it makes going to events and performing well a whole lot easier. I do not have the time to come up with my own crazy powerful lists. So I just kind of, I find that by looking at lists that other people have made, other people who have had a lot of success with, and tweaking those, it's a hell of a lot easier. The other thing that's nice is it lets, you know, if you come upon some crazy combo or some neat thing that no one thought was good, you get to have that little surprise element and no one knows what's going on until that becomes a net deck. And that feels like it's probably fun for people.
I'm torn on net decking. I understand the concept if, you know, I really want to. I want to build, you know, a Thyron list, or I want to build a Xerxes 1 list, and I'm having a hard time doing it. I've tried 6 or 7 things. I put them on the table. I'm getting, you know, all sorts of crap going wrong. I go and I research and see what other people have done and use those as a learning opportunity to tailor my own list. I try yours out, but I'm not you. I don't have your game experience. I don't have your tabletop experience. What you can do with that list and what I can do with that list are two vastly different things. But, you know, so I try and take what you've written. I play it my way. I make my changes. That, to me, is okay because it's a learning and it's a learning and growth and development opportunity. But I see so many people say, just like when Kingdom Con comes and goes, when whatever con comes and goes and the one list wins and everyone's like, oh my God, where are the lists? And then, you know, they want to like the Rhett page. I got to unfollow the Rhett page on Facebook because they're just, oh my God, what's a winning list? And they just want to like 45 people all playing Mike Ireland's lists or Kat's lists. It's just like, okay, guys, pull some creativity out of your own asses, try something different and see what you can do. Like, I don't know. I get like Charles Soong. He's a great Merc player, you know. Jake is a great Legion player, and you know, they put a lot of time and thought and effort into designing their lists, and then they have to put up with 45 copycat clones. like, all doing what they do, just worse. It just feels like a cheap imitation game.
No, I disagree on a an extremely vehement level. One, just because I play different models doesn't mean I am actually learning anything. What you should notice, what a person should notice when playing a game like this, is that there will be superior iterations. And doing the same work and forcing people and shaming people into doing the same work that somebody else, the innovator, has already done, just so that they can prove that they've done it and arrive at the same conclusions, is nonsensical. I don't have time or desire to use all these units, to iterate on all these units. I don't want to play 7 games with Xerxes in suboptimal situations just so I can say, yep, goddammit, that's suboptimal, and Jimmy over there learned that 8 months ago. Like, that seems really dumb to want people to do. So instead, you become an innovator by being good at your faction. You don't get good at your faction by becoming an innovator, right? See, you have to do one step before you get the other.
See, but what you're doing there is you're saying, don't reinvent the wheel. Take the wheel as it is. You don't understand the technology and the development that went into designing this wheel. Just play the wheel, and without all those learning and growing opportunities, and just go. Just rob and duplicate. Go forward.
Not at all. That's not what anyone's saying. Because you're going to play a shitload of games with that wheel, and you're going to get the hang of it. And you're going to watch battle reports with that wheel. And you're going to understand how it spins. You're going to figure it out. Now, if you're the kind of, like, I've certainly run into the kind of player who just plays whatever the Clunet list is, doesn't know how it works, doesn't know what's going on, drops it down, gets the shit pushed in, and then cries. Right. Like, so that's one person. That is 100% not what I would consider the norm. That's not really what I'm talking about I think John's talking about when I say that, you know, in general, I like the idea of net decking. I like it, how it's kind of a collective knowledge kind of situation, because that's just stupid. You're just going to lose games. You're going to hate the game. You still have to put work into it. You still have to understand the list. You still have to know what you're doing. But pulling that magical list out of the air requires a shitload of games with a lot of stuff. Like John's saying, you know, like trying out these different permutations that seem like they're probably bad, but ooh, maybe they're not. But, oh, nope, it is. And there's a week of games wasted. Great.
Yeah, but still, like, hypothetically, you take your player X, and he's wins, I don't know what's the tournament in England? Whatever. He wins the big tournament in England. And, you know, people post his lists, and people over here are like, oh my god, score and won a tournament, I'm taking that list. That list is in the European meta. It's in England. The opponents he faces are probably different from the opponents in your meta. So now you take this list that was designed for a whole different meta, and yeah, what a you know, really good con. But, and now you're putting it in your meta, and you're going, well, the pieces aren't jiving, it's not beating this, it's not beating that, it's not beating the Sloanes that he didn't have to face, but all of a sudden I'm seeing these Sloanes here. Like, there's an inherent risk to net decking, and I'm not saying it's a bad thing, I'm just saying use it as a learning tool, don't use it like according to Hoyle, right? Like, it's not the end-all be-all, just because this list won a tournament, or god, even won two tournaments, like one in, you know, Timbuktu and one over in England, and you're you get what I'm trying to say there. I'm having a hard time articulating that, but
no, I see where you're coming from. But again, like I said, there's still a learning curve. You're still learning. You still got to figure shit out. It's just starting with an already established list is a hell of a lot easier than trying to make this shit up yourself. And that's what I think of when I think of this, the kind of a net decking, is like you're taking something that someone else has used, committing yourself to understanding it, learning it, moving forward from there. you know, if it's not working great in your meta, well then now once you have that knowledge base down, you know how this is supposed to work. So like, let's say I have this, you know, so for example, you know, the Zadash 2 double turtle list, right?
Yep.
So if I know that this is the normal list, right? And I believe the normal list tends to run a pair of Titan
sentries,
right? So I tried that list, ran a bunch of times, was a huge fan. Didn't like sentries in the list. Seemed unnecessary when you factor in the fact that Zadash is already has. Wow, my brain Sackbon. Just not. There you go, Sackbon.
I'm glad I play your faction, sir.
Yeah, thanks. So I said, well, that's not ideal to me. Let's try something else. So let's throw some soldiers in here. You know, throwing some soldiers in. I got some pull shenanigans. You get some really interesting shit going on with pull in the, in defensive strikes. You can really fuck up charge lanes, do all sorts of cool stuff with free strike, things like that. I'm going to try that instead. Oh, I like that. That's a lot more fun. I definitely like this version of the list. So that's an example of a modified list that came from a net deck list. And that I've used for and put it in a way that I enjoy it.
Isn't that what I was just arguing? Using it as a learning development point. Don't just copy it according to Hoyle and Go.
Yeah, sure. But you said you're having trouble elucidating it, so I just gave another example.
Then you did a great job.
So, for me. When I look at net decking, there are two people's immediate starting points. If learning the game is a spectrum, right, net decking allows you to start in the middle as opposed to at the beginning. And there is some value to starting at the beginning, but I don't think it is worth the effort starting at the beginning when you can start at the middle and learn to the height of your capability. As it just the first half of that game, the value is so low compared to the second half of the game, where you can start and modify and iterate from a known successful point. And if you're talking about net decking as, oh, I grabbed this list and I use this list forever and I get disappointed if I don't win, then yeah, that's stupid. If you use any list and you get disappointed when you don't win, that's stupid. If you use it as a foundational learning experience for your faction, your army, a new faction, the game, then I think we're all in agreement that it is a useful tool and a successful strategy.
Yeah. So I like that.
All right. So the next question is from Zane. How do you think that social media, Facebook, Discord, streams, etc., impact perceptions about specific factions/models, as well as the overall perception of the game? How do you think these online gathering places can be improved to improve the community as a whole?
So really what you're talking about is the discussion aspect versus the groupthink aspect here, right? And kind of which one seems to be more prevalent.
That seems a legitimate tack he's taking there.
So I think in general I like it. You know what? That's a lie. In general, I like parts of it. The Facebook groups are almost universally garbage. And that's not to say there's not good stuff on there. It's just not a good way to do it. It's a whole bunch of people who mostly just yell about things. And I see a lot of complaining, a lot of bitching, a lot of saltiness every time something new happens. It seems like the doom cycle is dramatically accelerated on the Facebook groups versus on the forums. The Discord I feel better about. It kind of seems like there's a better idea of conversation there. And I think, honestly, oddly enough, that has to do with my least favorite aspect of Discord. And that is, if someone tags me in a conversation and I go to check, like, even 15 minutes after I've been tagged, the conversation is lost into the ether, and if I try and bring it up, no one knows what the fuck I'm talking about. But the fact that everything moves at that... What's up?
It's that it is a instantaneous, perpetual conversation. Like,
yes.
There's no way you're not conversing about something.
Yeah. And, you know, because of that, you know, like in Facebook, I pull up the group and I scroll on all the different topics, and you can respond to all those topics individually, and a lot of the discussion ends up stagnating until you kind of eventually kind of move on. With Discord, it's almost impossible for the discussion to stagnate just because shit's moving by so good, so quickly. And because of that, I think that kind of helps prevent some of the groupthink and issues that you see in a medium like Facebook.
See, to me, the Facebook groups are raging shitholes. It's unfortunate for the few individuals in each group that are actually genuinely trying to use them for what they were intended for, as places to talk or gather ideas or share facts and plan, sort of like, you know, net decking, except it's idea decking. Like, I'm throwing this idea out, who's done what, who's made this work, what are your thoughts, and inevitably the fucking morons just pounce and just fill it with stupid shit or ask questions that, you know, it's Facebook, so I can't actually use puppets and crayons to explain stuff to them. And it's just like, oh my god. So the Facebook groups in general kind of trigger me, because they could be so much, but they're not.
Yeah, like, even normally reasonable people, like I consider myself to be a pretty reasonable person most of the time, can very, fuck you, John, can very easily find myself kind of going off the deep end in the Facebook groups just because of kind of the mob mentality that shows up there. Like, just recently in the Legion page, someone posted over there complaining about the fact that Privateer is charging $15 for the caster draft decks. And, you know, I kind of joined on that, jumped in, throwing some shit at Privateer, kind of talking about how this is kind of bullshit. And then I got called out on it. And I mentioned that I thought it was lame that they're charging $15 for PDF. And then I was told, no, it's an actual deck of poker cards. Oh. Hmm. Well, I guess I should look into that myself and not just listen to what angry people on Facebook were saying. And, you know, now I look like a dumbass because instead of doing my due diligence, I just listened to what people on Facebook said. So it tends to be kind of a self-perpetuating cycle almost, because it's very easy to fall into those traps.
Right, and my thing with Facebook is I'm only a member of the groups I actually deal with on a day-to-day basis. I am a member of Crix and Scorn. Okay, well, that's about it. But what happens there that I dislike, that doesn't foster conversation, that doesn't create a better system, is that everything is just a firmal. Everything goes and shows up for 10 minutes, and then, hey, I'm working on Scar 3, and then it vanishes, and another person 20 minutes later, instead of contributing to the old discussion, now is, hey, I am also working on Scar 3, except they don't use also because they didn't know this stupid conversation happened 45 minutes ago. And they do that with, hey, I'm playing Scavrous 2, hey, as well, not Scavrous the second. I'm playing Scavrous 2. What are you guys doing? Like, we went over this conversation yesterday. Can they find it? No. They can't go and find it. They can't. It's not a resource to be used. It's just a place for people to scream at each other for fun. And that builds into the exact problems that you have when you can't have meaningful discussions over a longer period of time. There only exists either instantaneous immediate discussion a la Discord or Screamfests, and that's Facebook.
Yeah, that's kind of why I also like, you know, Lorma Hordes, you know, that the kind of redo of the old Privateer Press forums, heralded by Zane himself, who's asking the question. I think it's nice to have a forum. You know, I think that's probably your best format for this. It allows for a good level of moderating. It allows for persistent conversations. It devolves into a scream fest less. And, you know, really, it sounds like what I'm saying is I liked it better when we had forums to talk in, which...
that are moderated.
Yeah, you know, I mean, that's not... a terribly revolutionary thought. You know, it's funny how something that seems so obvious, but there you are.
Yep, I'm right there with you.
So part of the question is, how do these things impact perceptions about specific factions and models? And I think it can have a real negative impact. Like, if you jump on the Menoth page and you say, "Hey guys, how are the Bastions or the Cinerators?" And you hear, "Oh my god, they're unplayable trash, they're total garbage, they're this, they're that, avoid them, blah, blah, blah." And those are the models that drew you to the faction. You know, you're going to be like, "Huh, well, I just bought these models and I'm not even going to bother putting them together or even trying to play them or whatever because, you know, everyone says they're poop." Instead of saying, "Well, here's some ways I've managed to use them successfully. Let me know if you find a different way." It's, "No, they're garbage, don't even bother." And it's true, they're garbage and don't even bother. But the way you deliver that message can really impact on someone's ability to play or someone's ability to even have fun with the game or learn the game. So I think it's how those messages are delivered, there's an inherent risk to that.
That's fair. I mean... if somebody comes to me and says, "I want to play Sturgis too," I'm literally just going to tell them don't. It doesn't matter what format it's in. But you're right, the way I can then follow up don't matters, right? So if it's in a situation where I can be like, "Don't, because," and here's this litany of things that, the experiences that I can draw on and things that I can show you that make you look at Sturgis 2 in a different way, or if it's just like, "Don't, because he's dumb and dumb people do dumb things. Peace." Like, that's not helpful. And that's how all of the social media reacts.
And then, but the other side of that coin is someone comes on, like somewhere to come to you and say, "Oh, I just bought Sturgis 2. I put them together. I painted them. Help me build a list." You're not going to say, "He's a piece of shit. You're stupid." You're going to say, "Okay, well, he's not the strongest caster in the game, but if you're just going to have some fun, let's see what we can do to learn." And you're going to try and help someone build the best list you can possibly can and explain all the iterations of that list and the things they should try and the things they should look for. And then let them learn that he's poop on his own. Like, set the expectations that he's a difficult caster to win with. But you're delivering it in a constructive and educational manner. Not, "Well, that was stupid."
Yeah, there's something to be said about having to learn that Sturgis is terrible on your own, and there's something to be said about saving however much money that list costs if it's not going to be a theme relevant to another caster some other time. And there's both ways.
All right. Dan, any final thoughts?
Nah.
All right.
Nah.
Paul Johan, thank you for taking the time to go over my question from last time. Well, you're most welcome, Paul. Is CID a different form of codex creep? If not, what makes CID feel different?
So, I do not think it's codex creep. John, what do you think?
So, it might be, but only in the most positive of ways. There are factions and models and things that have not been powerful for a very long time. And if they receive a powerful treatment, it will feel like codex creep, right? When Armored Core, traditionally terrible models, traditionally not particularly seen as effective tournament models, if they are given stuff that brings them up to the level of power that they should have existed in the beginning, it'll feel like they're getting a lot of good stuff. It'll feel creepy. Not that way. The other creepy way. It'll feel like power is creeping up, but instead, they're getting the toys that should have been given to them 10 years ago sometimes. And I revel in it. Like, I love the idea that Exemplar and the Armored Core and the Blighted Ogryn are getting all pulled up to the points where they need to be. So yes, it might be Codex creep. But I think they're doing it in the right manner to make the things that are not particularly the best pulled up to where they need to be. And if they already are good, they're not really rocketing them over the edge.
Right.
And there's another element to so everything you just said, I completely agree with. Because there are things that from the Mark II to Mark III jump still don't feel balanced properly, or still didn't have the full scope of development put to them that they probably should have. But the other element of CID where things get like, let's take the last Kador CID. The Marauders went up in points. The Juggernauts went up in points. That's not power creeping. There's a level of rebalancing that's occurring there to say, you know what, in our first round, we might have under point costed this model. And they're bringing them up, and they're looking at Beast 09 that was 21 points and no one ever played him, and they're like, you know what, I think we need to knock him down 2 or 3 points to 18. Great. Like, so that rebalancing is definitely not 40K Codex creep. It's Privateer Press balancing creep, or a creep balancing on a tightrope. I don't know how you want to say it, but it's good for the game. I don't think that anything that's come and gone through it has been ridiculously ball busting or monumentously game changing, except for there's a few like Haley 2 changes or Denny 2 changes that some players would argue were just fundamental shifts in power, but they needed to bring those Titans down to the levels of the rest of us mere mortals. And I don't see it in that regard.
I have a fundamental. I would rather play with Titans than mortals. That's my only objection. Sure. I would rather play with Titans than mortals.
But if everyone has a Titan, when only a few people have the Titans, it's not fun for the mortals.
Don't be a mortal.
All right. Well,
just play Krix. That's what you've always said, right? Play Krix and Signar. Don't be immortal. Just play us. It'll be great. Everybody's happy.
The all Krix tournament, that would just be amazing.
I would agree.
In general, I think the biggest difference for me about going from Codex creep to CID is that a lot of the CID stuff is also augmenting older models. It's not purely new shit. So you're not looking at a game where you have to have the best and the newest, hottest thing to win.
Right. Like, if you have Kador, you can wait till your turn in the light, because it will be potentially a long time. It's not going to be 15 years before your Codex gets updated.
Right.
That's fair.
So, what's next?
All right, next is Elias Thuri. Something I've seen a lot lately floating around the meta is a mathematically powerful list that often lacks in tech pieces, being used with a caster that focuses more on control and tech. Do you think lists that where the opposite is true, casters that focus on mathematical dominance with a list that is focused on control or tech, can be just as powerful as good? So he goes on to explain. He says we did get his name right in the previous episode, so good. Hopefully I got it right again this time. So he goes on to say mathematically powerful lists would be generally skewed lists, as in skewed towards being faster or tougher or harder hitting, depending on their mathematical advantage to power through a matchup. Control/tech pieces rely on special rules and a variety of ever-changing situations to play against your opponent. Most lists he sees are mathematical lists. The best lists are... Jesus. Holy shit, how long is this? Are mathematically strong units, jacks, whatever, with a caster that provides the tech to the out... provides the tech to outplay opponents, while relatively few lists have a mathematically focused caster and the units... slash models to provide the tech control to win the match.
So, what I get from this is that do you use math and the numbers of the game to hammer your opponents into submission because your numbers are better than their numbers, or do you play Circle of Sigmar?
Yeah, honestly, I was thinking a similar thing, really. You're basically talking about... this is a huge simplification, but this almost feels like, so, spam or control shit?
Right.
Because when I think math and numbers and better numbers than you, the first faction that pops into my head is Kador, for obvious reasons. You know, I used to have, a friend of mine used to joke with me, you know, when you ask someone what a stat on a Kador model is, it's probably about one higher than you feel like it should be. Like, you know, it's a faction that has great numbers, and that lends itself very well to just running a shitload of warjacks and just going bananas and letting your opponent do whatever dirty tricks they have, with safe in the knowledge that your numbers will see you through. It's a lot less active on the player's part. There's a lot less going on versus if you're looking at, you know, kind of like the Signar Circle kind of... you know, tech control style, you got to think a lot harder. So, I think I probably see the mathematically power list more often just because there's more lists that are like that, I think. More factions run those lists than there are with the kind of tech control lists.
See, the way I'm thinking a mathematically powerful list is, I think he's referring to something like the like a nine slayer list with Gatsby, and the Gatsby provides the control pieces for the soul collection and the tech to with mobility to basically just spin those jacks up and let those jacks do all the work, because they're fast, they're hard hitting, they have unyielding and carapace. So is the flip side of that true, which would be, I'm trying to come up with like what the flip side of that would be. Like
honestly, the flip side of that is the Denny 2 version of that list.
Where Denny 2 does a lot of the work and the jacks are just there to...
Or like Denny 2 and 1 or 2 jacks do a lot of work. Like Death Jack does a lot of work in her version of the list because he has interesting rules. There's tech, there's elements that you can do there that is more active play on the player's part.
So, yeah, I think this question comes down to basically the casters you play. Some casters, like, casters are the... I'm so sorry, someone is moving a chair above my head. Some casters are drive your army, and other casters are the focal point of your battle. Like Grim One with his negative two who can't run feet. Like he affects the table and he dictates that your guys can't be reached and they get that extra round of fire. But who's the trollcaster with the gun, or the snipe and the big bazooka?
Gunbjorn.
Gunbjorn's totally different. He himself is a monster at shooting. He buffs your beasts. He it's a rather intelligent question that has some unfortunately ambiguous answers.
I think control lists are better in general. I think control lists have a greater ability to deal with sheer numbers because they're not fighting numbers against numbers, so they use the inherent power of the list against it. However, I feel that they are harder to use, they are more difficult to wrap your head around, and that by far, if you want the strongest amount of success for the least amount of effort, numerical superiority is your friend.
Yes, definitely.
Perfect.
So, we got one question left.
Yep.
All right, good cast.
As normal, that's the Tim Mackey question. So, read away.
Oh, Jesus. Who are the top five active players of the game, in the opinion of each of the hosts, and what leads you to believe that is them? If any of you have played people in the category, any of you have played people in this category, what distinguishes the way they approach the game?
So, I like half of this question, and I don't like the other half. So, I'm going to ignore the half I don't like, and I'll tell you why. The half I don't like is the picking my own top five. I don't know top five. I can't choose top five. It changes a lot. Just pulling up real quick, kind of the, you know, discount games tournament wins. You got names everyone knows. You know, you got your Chris Orrs, your Bubba Daltons, you got Patrick Dunford, you got your Jake Van Meter. You got your Jason Watt if you go a little bit further. And these are all names that I think are kind of universally recognized as like, oh, these are the top guys. Tim Mackey as well. These are the guys that know what they're doing. They win a lot of the big events, but there's a bunch of them, and like they tend to cycle out, right? I'm much more interested in the how those players approach the game, because I've played against a couple of them, and there are some very clear differences, in my opinion, than playing against as you mentioned before, the mere mortals. Probably some of the biggest ones I've noticed is that there's almost no wasted actions. When they're playing the unit, they move the unit, and like all the models go into a specific position, because positioning is a huge part of this game. And more often than not, I'm like, oh, huh. I guess I can only get a couple of models versus the rest of these models. And so by doing that, that both gives you an advantage in that, you know, only a few models of yours can die, but also you didn't have to spend points on extraneous protector models for them. So you can do stuff in other ways. Positioning. That's where I'm getting at. I feel like I lost my train of thought, so one of you talk.
All right. To touch on that part of the, what do they do to distinguish the way they approach the game? I often marvel when I listen to podcasts or just even having a conversation with someone like Tim. Like Tim's at my local store. I play Tim all the time. Great guy, classy guy, super fun opponent. And in those learning games, it's great because you take the time to say, you screwed that up or back that up. Like there's things where he's like, if you make that move, I have you dead to rights. I'm going to kill you. So back that move up, and let's continue the game and just do something different because I want to play you at the best that you can be. And it's sort of like watch your dead. Let's re-rack. Let's pause the clock. Watch. I'm going to kill you. Boom, boom. See, let's re-rack or let's just back that turn up and just keep going and let's continue playing. What's a really good game and minus the brain fart. But there's other, these weird little like things that come out that I would never have thought of that are just marvelous little pieces of advice. Like one of the things Tim has said before is, I want to know where I want this army to be turn three. So I set up the table, I set up terrain, I put the models where I want them to be turn three, and then I back them up for their turn two movement, and then I try and make it back to the deployment zone for turn one. And then I try to analyze where I need to deploy them and where I need to, how I need to move them and where I need to move them and just like things like that, that I'm like, fuck, I never thought of that. I would never have said, well, shit, I'm just going to reverse play my first two turns to get the ultimate position that I want. Like, obviously things change when there's other models on the table, but it gives you an idea of how to deploy and where to deploy and how, what terrain you have to watch out for. And just like to practice like that, like that's like ridiculous. And some of the other things where like playing on, 7 minute round timers in addition to your 60 minute death clock and just trying, yes, trying to speed your turn up, like little things like that. Just, there's a whole other level of dedication and thought that's put into this game that takes those, the top five, whoever they are, the elites, to that level.
See, there's another point in addition to all those, because those are very good points. I was at my first or second lock and load, and man, who is Circle Colin? I wish I remembered his last name from Texas / Australia. But Colin was playing Circle, and Keith was playing Crix. They're playing into each other, and they're just having a blast. And they're playing for top table. And I go, how the hell do you guys do this? How do you take yourself out of the game and not like just absorb yourself into every minute detail of the game? And they're like, it's just a game against your friends. Like, so they're, in addition to being exacting and detailed and make sure they know what they're doing, they're able to separate that portion from being obsessed with making sure it always works. Right? If they lose a game, it's just a game. They lost. They learn from it. They move on. And I think that that mentality of friendliness and yet still like hardcore competition, that meld approaches the game very differently than a lot of people do. There's a great subsection of people who will just nail you to the wall for every mistake you make, and then you break into this elite tier, whatever we fucking want to call it, and they don't. They play the game in the most brutal, hardcore spirit of the game it was meant to be played in. No holds barred, no punches pulled, both people come out grinning at the end because they played an awesome game. And I think that makes a lot of difference.
Yeah, that's definitely true. I mean, I can definitely see that. And I've definitely noticed that myself, and just sort of kind of like, you know, going to tournament play and getting to the point where, you know, you're doing a little better, you're starting to see more wins than losses. And I've noticed very frequently I'll come to the point where I'll come to a player, and the player will hold my feet to the fire and double check all my decisions, double check all my moves, and double check all my rules, and make sure everything I'm doing is correct, and make sure that everything, all I'm dotting all my I's and crossing all my T's. And without fail, I will crush that player's dreams and hopes like with no issue. Because the player that is at that point of the game is doing that because they don't know what they're doing. And they know that their best chance to win is to catch you in a fuck up, right? So once you get beyond that, it becomes a lot less important, because you approach the game going, I feel very confident in my skills, very confident in my abilities. I feel like I can probably beat this guy even if he makes a couple mistakes and I let it slide.
See, there's another definition of active player that I think we need to address, which is the people who are active in the community. Like, for example, like Arcane Assist or Party Foul or Moose Machine or those guys who go out of their way to have podcasts to try and interact with the community, to teach stuff to the people in the community. Like the guys from Party Foul are always advertising, hey, it's Wednesday, we're all going to be at the game store tonight, come on out, play us a game, show us your new list, if you want to have a game against one of us, let us know, we'll be there. We're like really just trying to foster community and foster the advancement of the game and as a whole, right? So I think besides just individual players, there's improving their individual game, there's also people who are actively improving the state of the game as a whole, and that is that does nothing but good things for the game. So I don't know if that was part of Tim's question or if I've just squirreled my way down a bizarre little rabbit hole.
I thought right. By active he meant still playing, so I couldn't choose like James Morehouse or Big Deno. That's all.
All right.
That
was my answer.
That all the questions we got?
That was it. We kind of copped out on Tim's because we didn't really
We did because we don't know enough people to make judgment calls to make sure that we get an
educated
decision.
It.
What's that?
I completely understand why we did it.
Yeah.
We got the spirit of the question. That counts.
Yes.
Seems good.
That seems like a cast. Unless anyone has anything else.
No, it's perfect.
No, that's it.
Let's do this in the next 3 minutes. Let's go.
So until next time, gentlemen and ladies, this is Battle Driven. Someone say Battle Driven.
You have to say it first, don't you?
Oh, Christ. Battle Driven.
Battle Driven.
Battle Driven.
And stop.